On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. Matt Robinson with you on the Sunday of what's become a newsworthy weekend across our country for all the wrong reasons. As most of you will have heard by now, horrible accident just north of Tillsdale, Saskatchewan, involving the Humboldt hockey team. It's a junior team full of players ages, 16 to 21. As we sit here right now, 15 confirmed dead, mostly young men who played on the team, and obviously there's coaches and volunteers along with them as well. One of those things where, you'll notice we did a cold open, no music, no screwing around. Didn't really seem appropriate with some of the stuff that we kind of do around here. And while we try to have a keep things light, sometimes, it's just not the right time. Only so many people that open to talking about this kind of thing, but I did think the conversation was important and I did want to do something. Reached out to our friend Amy Burke to come on and talk about it with us. She's on the line right now. How's it going, Amy?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long, rough weekend. It's been interesting it's sad when anyone dies, especially when any young person dies and when any group of people dies. This one seems to have really kind of gripped the nation. I think there's probably a few different reasons for that. But let's start, when did you first hear about what had happened? And
Saturday morning. Yeah, I was with my father-in-law there and he said something about it. And then I was just like, holy crow.
Yeah.
just sounds crazy.
I'll be honest with you. I think I saw it late Friday night on Twitter and at the time, there was very, very little information, and the tweet was something along the lines of a bus carrying the Humboldt Broncos was in an accident. Prayers to everyone involved, and you see things like that online now and then, and you go, "Well, that's sad." But at the time, there was no newspaper article, there was no story; it was a tweet, and so I kind of moved on, right? It was the same for me Saturday morning when you woke up and you realize, oh man, this is bad, right? I don't know if you saw any of the pictures. It's scary looking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that poor bus doesn't even look like a bus, but that was something that that he said too, and he was telling me that was one of the last things he saw, but not the pictures of the bus, but the news story before going to bed was that a bus full of kids was at a collision with a transport.
Yeah.
And he was like, and his first reaction was, oh man, I don't want to see this in the morning.
No, exactly.
Like nobody wants to wake up and hear just like all the details on it because it's going to be rough.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, I think we all have our own ways of reacting to these things, of dealing with these things, of reacting to these things. You and I aren't going to solve any problems here. We're not going to mend anyone's heart here tonight. But I do find and I know you do too, that most of the time the conversation is important. It doesn't solve anything sometimes, but it can help. And this is what the country's talking about right now. And I think one of the reasons is that it's so relatable. I mean, hockey's our thing. Junior hockey, we have a special affinity for. It's our young boys traveling around doing their thing. But it's not just that. It's this sort of thing. Every morning across the country, everyone goes out and puts their kids on a bus with someone they don't really know and just trusts that they'll get them where they're supposed to, and then brings them back home. And it starts a whole lot younger than what we're dealing with here. But even in the sense of on the prairie countries where you're from, out in the Maritimes, where, you know, here in Ontario, things are pretty urban. There's people all over the place. There's a lot of travel involved in a lot of things like this. And maybe it's not your hockey team. Maybe it's soccer or football or rugby or any other sport. Maybe it's, you know, your children's choir, right? Maybe it's your cheerleading team, whatever it might be. This is very kind of true to this country, right? We're a big country and we're spread out a long way. And long travel is just a part of it that goes with so many things in life, right? And you are someone who chased your Paralympic dream from an extremely young age and traveled the country and the world as a teenager. And I'm sure your mom worried from time to time, and maybe we'll get into that a little later. But I think for me,
my mom worries now when I go in a car.
That's what moms do, right? I think that's why maybe this one has gripped it everyone so tight, is that you could so easily envision it being someone you know, or it's so relatable, right, to so many Canadians. The hockey thing is one thing, obviously that's stereotypically Canadian and whatever, but this is just such a part of life here.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and a lot of the times when you're doing traveling from, you know, event to event, or, you know, your home game or your away games, it's all done by bus, because we obviously, well, I mean, you're not going to freaking fly from Alberta to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Humboldt, Saskatchewan Yeah.
Like, it's expensive, so it just makes sense to put everyone on a bus.
Right. And most of these kids will tell you.
Well, and that's where a lot of relationships are formed and
yeah.
stuff.
It becomes an extension of the locker room, right? It's you jump on your bus with your boys and your teammates, your friends, and you travel. And some of these, especially in the prairies, where you travel so far, you're on the bus overnight. And guys are sleeping on the floor, and you know you just have this comfort level. It's just something that you don't even think about because you do it every day for almost every game, and it's something, and you know, all of a sudden we all get kind of shocked back to reality. I have no doubt that in the next week or so, you'll start to see sensationalist stories on the news about his bus travel safe in Canada. This was a one in a million accident. But it's sad. It jerks you back to reality in a real hurry, right? It's
well, and it's kind of like what you said earlier. We put kids, you know, at a very young age, you're sending them off on things. I mean, I know in Ontario, you're sending kids on a school bus at like 4.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, not to totally take it away from this, but there was, I think less than a month ago, a little girl died on the school bus because it got T-boned by a semi-truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, hey, I don't want to put my kid on the school bus next year.
Yeah. No, and it's, but, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's like, It's just, you know, it's the things we not take for granted, but it's just sometimes, you know, this was the tragedy that no one ever would have expected.
Right.
But it is reality.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Of course. Yeah.
And I hate my poor social media pages right now is just bombarded is the wrong word, but just like overflowing with, you know, the whole news stories, and I hate clicking on them because it's just like it makes me so teary and I don't want to read it, but then I want to read it, and it's just,
I'll admit to the same thing. Some of this stuff that I've watched and read and heard, it's hard not to get a little choked up, right?
And it's just that seeing how the Canadian, like just how everyone is rallying behind the community.
Yep.
Like there's Like I saw a Sports Center earlier today. There's this one store that has been printing up T-shirts, selling them for $25, and $20 of each shirt goes towards a fund that's going to go and support the families of everybody on the team. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't keep up with the demand of the demand.
Right.
And they ended up running out of ink to print the shirts. So this one of the owners or family friend or somebody, he drove off to Edmonton, drove overnight to get more ink to get back so that they could keep printing shirts. And it's like the poor, you know, it's just like that alone made me tear up. And it's just like, it's just so sad.
Everybody to see, wants to help, right? Wants to be part of, you feel yes, helpless. Like, you want to do something. And this is the little thing that I can do to
help and, you know, show people that I'm thinking about them. And
yeah.
Oh, it's just such a sad thing. Like, like part of me still can't wrap my head around it, that it actually happened and that 15 people have died and the majority of them were kids.
I'll tell you the two stories that have really gotten to me so far. One is a young kid. He was 21 years old on his 21st birthday. He signed his organ donor card, and he was one of the kids who died in the accident. And his parents were there. He apparently had told his parents, you know, very soon after his birth, he said, "This is important to me, right? Like this isn't something that I'm just doing. This is something I'm serious about." And then sure enough, just weeks later, he's in an accident and they take him to, I think it was Regina, but it could have been Saskatoon. I can't remember. After he's deceased, so they can, his heart's already been given to something, someone else. Six of his other organs have been taken and given. Like, this kid saved six lives by, you know, this, having that thought before. He obviously never thought at 21 this would be when it would happen. But that kind of stuff chokes me up, that you know, this family is going through what they're going through, the loss of their son, and at the same time knowing that he just saved six other lives. It's got to be such a strange, you know, the kid's a hero, but he never meant to be, right? Like,
yeah, and now they're out, you know, they now don't have their son anymore, but six other families.
Yeah.
Get to, you know.
Well, and the thing about organ donation, for the most part, is that unless you arrange it or both sides kind of go through the hospital, you don't usually find out where the organ came from.
Yeah.
But if you're in a hospital in Regina that night and all of a sudden, like, how do you not probably
assume? Well, I mean, even
assume,
if you're in like Calgary or just Winnipeg or somewhere close by, you know, if all of a sudden, you're on a waiting list for so long and then you're like, "Hey, we have a liver for you."
It's right.
Like, well, okay, yeah, I know where that's coming from.
The other one was, and I think you read the same story, of a father who lived nearby where the accident happened, and his son phoned him from the bus. He was one of the kids who survived and actually was held up in pretty good shape, but he called his dad screaming, "The bus has been an accident." Like, you'd be just hysterical looking around at what's around you and all these people dying. And his dad drives and manages to get there in like 20 minutes. And his son actually comes running over to him. Later in the story, it says that he had like a chipped vertebrae and his shoulder was messed up. But, you know, considering he was doing okay, and the guy's hugging his dad and whatever, and his dad gets him into the car to make sure he's okay. And the kid needs to go to the hospital, but his dad, knowing that his son's pretty stable, instead of taking off to race to the hospital, he starts trying to help other people, right? And he's back in the bus. And like, how, as a parent, your first instinct would be, my kid, right? I got to take, and this guy stuck around because no one else was there yet. There's some other people stopping on the side of the highway when they've seen it, but there's no ambulances or fire trucks. And to be brave enough to not just take off with your own kid, to be able to process in that moment, yeah, he's hurt and he needs medical attention, but it's not life-threatening. I can maybe help some other people here. The urge would be to take care of you and your own first, but to stay there that was...
Yeah, like, I mean, I would like to think that would be my reaction, is to stay and help and whatnot. But, you know, unless you're in that situation, you don't know how you're actually going to act, like, react to it.
Yeah.
But no, good on that, man. Like, for just going to try and help. Like, and I mean, like, you see it everywhere. They weren't just teammates, they were family.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the thing about junior hockey, right? Is there's going to be 15 families at time of recording that have lost kids. The thing about junior hockey is there's more like 30 families because most of them have billets. And,
yeah,
you know, for those who aren't super familiar with the way junior hockey works, usually you're not playing in your own hometown, and different families and stuff put you up. They have a relationship with the team, and you go and live with that family for 2 or 3 years while you play in this other community. And you become a part of the family. It's amazing, and I'm sure you've seen it too, Amy. Every year at the Stanley Cup Final, when they have all those people on the ice, half the players have brought in their billets as well as their parents, right? This is my mom, Jack and Judy or whatever, and these were my billets from Kitchener or wherever, right, that you played your junior hockey, and you brought them too because they become like another family. And so this town of Humboldt, which is only a town of 5,600 people, you know, they all these billets, all these people with ties to the community have all been touched. Like, it's such a small town. It's such a rural province to begin with that everybody's going to know someone who's been affected.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say is small towns like that, everybody knows everyone. So, yeah, I mean, like, I can't imagine.
And that's been my reaction a couple times talking to different people about it, or, you know, even trying to get ready to do this. And that's what I keep coming back to is, like, you kind of get choked up and you can feel it and you know, you're whatever, but you really can't imagine what they're going through, right? It's,
well, and to slight side story, not side story, but yeah. One of the, like, first thing I thought of when I heard it Saturday morning, like, we're just driving in the truck and I think at that point in time it was 14 were confirmed dead.
Right.
And it was just, you know, and first thing I said is, well, what about the truck driver?
Yeah.
Like, I would assume he'd be fine just because of, or at least alive, just because of how high he is compared to the bus. And obviously the bus is going to take more of the impact than the semi.
Right.
And I mean, there hasn't been much released on that guy other than he...
Well, it has come out tonight. He's fine. Like, he's essentially fine. He's a little messed up, but he's, you know, as you said, he was in a better position to... and the cops took him in and interviewed him, like you do when you've caused an accident.
Yeah, but they released him.
He's been released, yeah.
But it's just...
They've
that
said
poor
he's,
man.
He's having... Yeah, he's in counseling already because you're never going to live, like, that down.
No, it's almost, and I mean, again, it's when you're not in that situation, you don't know, but you would almost want to die.
Yeah, I think
then
there's something
to
that.
Then have to live, like, then to know, like, assuming it wasn't his fault or anything, there's no evidence showing that it was his fault.
Yeah,
like,
that stuff hasn't
set
come
out that
yet.
Date.
That's right.
Yeah, like, that's going to take a while for them to investigate,
right.
But there was no way in hell...
He never
got up that morning and said, I'm going
to
go kill 15
right,
people.
Right.
So, I mean, the poor man, like, it's just.
I'll tell you.
How do you live with that?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story that this makes me think of. And I had a friend of mine who came from a rough upbringing. And she bounced around between a couple of foster homes. And, you know, eventually, you know, she did really well for herself considering what she had gone through. And she finished, like, top of her class in high school, managed to get herself a scholarship because she was a hockey player in upstate New York. And that was going to pay for her education. She had no illusions that she was ever going to play for Team Canada or anything like that. But this was a way to get her education paid for. And given where she'd come from, that was probably the only way she was going to get her education paid for. So she comes home after her first summer down there. And she's driving and she swerves because a group of birds are on the road. And so she swerves to miss them, ends up hitting a man on a motorcycle, and he dies. Again, total accident. She was at fault. They always say, you know, you can't swerve to miss animals. I'm sorry, you just can't, right? Like, everybody does, but that doesn't help you in a court of law. And... So keeping in mind that now she's potentially responsible for a death, right? There's going to be charges. There's going to be all these sorts of things after how hard she's worked to pull herself out of this. And while that's going on, you can't go back to school. You can't leave the country, right? So what's that doing to... And this man's family, he was about 60 years old, if I recall correctly, they showed up to, you know, the legal proceedings and said that it was an accident and they didn't want to press charges and they didn't want to see her life ruined. And I can't possibly imagine how, I don't believe I would ever have the strength to do that. I would be the type that's angry. You took him from me, right? You,
yeah.
To understand that this was an accident. And the fact that this young woman is going to have to live with that for the rest of her life is punishment more than enough, and she doesn't need her life ruined over it. And it's similar to here. She lives with that grief, right, as she moves forward, just like this guy's going to, right? And his is now going to be one of the most famous stories in Canadian history, as opposed yep. to one car accident in, you know, rural Ontario. This is... a huge thing that everyone's paying, and his name's going to come out. Everybody's going to know it was him. How do you live with that? I do. I have sympathy for that guy. And we'll see, you know, there's no evidence at this point to suggest this is happening. But if it turns out he was like half asleep at the wheel or drunk or whatever, then all of this changes. But right now, he's just a guy who was in an accident and now has to live with that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's just, that's so awful for him. Like, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh my God, like I couldn't even imagine trying to go to sleep at night.
How old were you when you started traveling for sport?
I was 13.
Wow.
13. No, yeah, 13.
That's actually younger than I thought. And do you remember where your first trip would have been?
Montreal, Quebec.
Okay, so from Charlottetown to Montreal, your mom
direct flight.
Montreal is sending, or your mom is sending her 13-year-old daughter off with a bunch of people she doesn't really know that well, and just trusting, like so many parents do in so many sports, that you'll look out for my kid, right? And it wouldn't take long in your career before it stopped being trips like Montreal or Saskatoon and started. To become,
I was gonna say Saskatoon was about 2 months later.
Yeah.
And then less than a year later, it was Brazil.
Yeah. You'll be.
Nope, year and a half later. Sorry, year and a half later.
Brazil and South Carolina and Beijing and all over the place, right? It doesn't take long. And as you've said now, you're a grown woman with a family of your own. Your mom still worries when you travel. But, you know, I'm sure most of those trips at different times were hard on her.
Well, and. Let alone the fact that she's terrified of flying.
Right.
Because, I mean, she's just terrified of flying. But, yeah, she hated it, absolutely hated it every time I left the house. I always had to call when I got somewhere. And, you know, if it was a drive somewhere or, you know, somewhere, you know, where your phone's not turned off, it was because, I mean, this is when I first started to text.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like. Well, actually, no, that's a lie. I had a calling card.
Yeah, we all had those at one point while we were traveling.
I had a calling card. Yep, I got a calling card when I started to travel so that I could call home as soon as I got places.
Yep.
So she knew everything was good and I was there. And then I had to call before I left. And then, like, yeah, man, it was like Tab Central.
Yeah, and I'm sure she's not... thinking about horrific stuff like this, but little things can go wrong and it would just be on your mind.
I'm pretty sure she was convinced my plane was going to crash.
I'm also convinced my planes are going to crash every time I get on them. So I kind of get where your mom's coming from. That stuff doesn't bother you at all though, does it? The flight, the,
no.
The safety of it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if my plane was crashing, I'd be a little concerned, sure. But
yeah. I'll tell you, I don't talk about it much on these shows, but I went to a residential high school, and essentially the arrangement was for everyone who went there, the school board had to your local school board, and those kids from around Ontario had to pay for your transportation. So I grew up in Oshawa, and this place was in Brantford, about 2 hours west. And so for my first several years, I left home at 12 years old in grade 7 to go and go to school there. And for the first several years, I would get picked up in South Oshawa near the 401 on this big coach bus, similar to what these kids would have been riding on, similar to a Greyhound, no different than what everybody else had been on. But, you know, bathroom in the back, everything. It wasn't just a school bus. It was a nice coach. So that happens for the first couple of years. And that bus started, I believe, in Brockville. So it would pick up kids in Brockville, Kingston, you know, Napanee, Belleville, whatever, on its way down the 401. Oshawa would be one of them. I think we stopped in Pickering. And then it would cruise on through to Brantford, and the Toronto area was the responsibility of a different bus. So at some point, my school board, a couple years into this, decides they can do it cheaper. They can find a volunteer who will just pick up the people in Oshawa and drive us in a minivan down to Brantford. And my mom was not impressed. These buses, they're driven by professional bus drivers who've been doing this for a long time. There was also a staff on the bus that would, you know, oversee, make sure all these kids are doing okay, because they ranged in age from grade school up to high school. Yeah. And it was a much more reliable and felt safer way to do it than this crumpled up minivan in the middle of January driving through a blizzard with just some volunteer driver that they dug up God knows where. And so my mom fought for a long, long time to get me back on this other bus. And they, you know, they just said, no, we, you know, this is budgetary and this and that. And so from then on, my mom called the organizers of that other bus and paid out of pocket for me to get back on that bus. So that minivan still took everyone else from Oshawa. But my mom felt strongly enough that that wasn't the right way to do it, and I was safer in this. And that's just the way we feel about these sorts of trips, right? These buses are supposed to be, you know, the safest way to go in terms of road travel, right? And we were never in anything like that. But my mom brought that up the other night when I was talking to her and said, you know, this is the worst fear of a parent, and you do everything you can to try and keep you safe. And you know, in this case, she was putting me on one of these buses because it was much safer than this shitty little minivan. And yet we find out, you know, these safe, impenetrable buses are still not infallible.
100%. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? It's just like that poor bus was totaled.
Oh, it wasn't even recognizable.
No, if that was the 15-passenger van.
Yeah. These kids, you would have met the same result, but I you know, no one would have survived, right?
Like, yeah, I was gonna say there would have been way higher numbers.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah.
I got a little choked up. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was gonna say I'd really try not to think about stuff like that, like, you know, sending Lucas off to school next year. And granted, he'll only be on the school bus for like 20 minutes, but there's stupid people out there, and then there are just accidents, you know, freak accidents that happen. But
yeah, because he's no more likely to get hurt there than with you on a city bus or whatever,
exactly.
Right? Like, sometimes shit just happens, and there's no way to
prevent it,
predict it, or to guarantee safety. But it's when you're there, you feel a little different than sending him away, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I hadn't thought about it much yet because, I mean, it's still, you know, 5-6 months away, 6 months away.
Maybe he won't. But, maybe you'll homeschool him.
Nah, I'm not doing that. I'd like my kid to get an education.
Yeah, it's not a great idea. Maybe Tyler will homeschool him.
But yeah, that would probably go a little better.
Yeah. I got a little choked up watching Mike Babcock, the coach of the Leafs there before whatever. He's a Saskatchewan guy. And he made it pretty clear, because he came out and he knew he was going to be asked about it and he was prepared to talk about it. But he said, I don't know any of these kids, but I know people back at home and I called them and they all know them. You either coached them as 10 or 11 year olds, or, you know, you were part of the community as something else, or one guy was a firefighter who was one of the first to arrive, right, to help. Someone said it really well on Twitter. He said, watching Mike Babcock in that press conference was like the first time I ever saw my dad cry. He said, you just don't think, I never thought I'd see it. And he's always just this guy, right? He doesn't really seem to get rattled like that, and there he is. He's clearly choked up like everyone else. It's there's quite a gathering. They always talk about the hockey community. Ron McLean and Don Cherry, they were on the air last night on Coach's Corner, and I just saw a hit before you and I came in here to record this on Sunday evening where they were in Saskatchewan this afternoon visiting people at the hospital. So clearly they went, jumped on a plane and
headed out there.
The head coaches of the Oilers and Flames both played their last games of the season. Horrible end to those seasons. Neither team making the playoffs. They were there today visiting with the families and the kids and stuff. So, people just try to do whatever they can.
And NHL teams across the league just supporting, doing a tribute before all their games last night.
And
a crap ton of money. Like, they did a lot of fundraising.
They set a GoFundMe page up that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was at the original goal was $15,000, and it hit it in like minutes. And so they raised it to $100,000. It blasted past that. And before we came in here, it was at pushing up against $4 million.
When I saw it yesterday, it was posted for 18 hours, I think.
Yeah.
It had already raised $1.3 million.
Yeah.
It was 18 hours or 8 hours. It was one of those. It had an 8 in it. I can't remember if it was 8 or 18.
I think it was 18.
Yeah, but they had the goal set at 2 million and it was at 1.3.
Yeah, because they keep moving it up, right? Because there's going to be a lot that goes into this, and some of these families are going to have huge costs ahead of them just in terms of legal fees and things like that, right? And then whatever the community needs and all of a sudden the media from around the country has descended on them and you have to put all these people somewhere and all this stuff gets expensive. And they're having tonight, I saw tonight, as you and I sit here and talk on Sunday evening, a vigil at their hockey arena. And, it seems Justin Trudeau is there. The premier of Saskatchewan obviously is there. And then some of your other hockey people that have come home. And like I said, there's a bunch of pro players with names that you'd recognize that, you know, no billets in that area and have said they're coming home or they're sending what they can. And the thing that was surprising to me, and I don't know why this stood out to me so much. I said this to someone else and they just kind of looked at me like I was an idiot. And so maybe I am. But a lot of these kids' families were already at the arena that they were traveling to that they were going to play at that night.
Yeah.
And so that community and Humboldt had both set up areas to come and be kept in the loop, right? And so the local grocery stores and restaurants were preparing meals and bringing them to all these scared families and parents and whatever else. And people were bringing jackets and blankets because it's cold as shit. It's cold here, but it's really cold in Saskatchewan, right? And all kinds of stuff like that. The thing that stood out to me that I never would have thought of, but that makes so much sense, is all kinds of people showing up with extra phone chargers. Because
yep,
all
that
you
was
wanted
one of the, that all, was one of the first things I saw too. And it was just crazy. Like,
I never in a million years would I have thought of that, but it would be one of the most important. All you would want to do is be as connected as you can. What do you know? Who can I call? What can I? And you know, you would wear out your phone in no time because who knows how long they were going to be there, right? And so to show up with that, I don't know why that stood out to me so much, but it's something I never would have thought of. But it becomes one of those things that is super important in that moment, right? Like, you need that.
Well, yeah, because it's not like you can just always have your phone juiced at 100% knowing, preparing for an accident like that. But yeah, I actually saw an article yesterday about that too, and I was like, what the hell? Like, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Never would I thought to just go bring my phone charger to somebody so that they could.
But that's become, in 2018, as much of a necessity as anything else. So, I mean, it just becomes one of those things, like I said, where the hockey community has rallied around them, the country has rallied around them, and it becomes a sad thing because it's just the way the world works that in a week or so, you know, it'll be out of the news, everybody moves on. Remember when Fort McMurray basically burnt to the ground, they had those huge fires? Everybody else goes back to normal, and these little communities are still left to deal with the aftermath, right? And this is going to be one of those things that stays with them for a very long time. And I think it's worse when it's young people, right? What does it do to your school? And what does it do to all those families? And, you know, in a totally selfish isn't the right thing because it has nothing to do with me, but, you know, in a thing that shouldn't be important but probably is to the community and to certain people, does this hockey team play next season, right? Like, do they try and half their team is gone? Would it be too painful to try and put it back together? Do you, you know, I,
or do you do it in honor of the victim, you know, those that,
yeah,
it's, oh yeah, they're, oh geez. Like, I can't even think about that.
That's, yeah. Just, and it's a long way down the priority list, but it is a priority for that organization. Right. And at some point right now, your responsibility is to help these families and these kids, but at some point you will have to turn your attention back to business, I guess.
Well, and I mean, I heard somebody say the other day, it might've even been you, overheard you saying something about, you know, maybe you retire that name, yeah, that team name.
Well, it hasn't had very good luck. There was a team in the 80s called the Swift Current Broncos that also had a bus accident. And four kids died in that crash. So, I mean, it's a total coincidence, but at some point, you know, maybe you want to let that go.
I couldn't even, and I'm sure that's nowhere on their minds right now.
No,
but no, I mean, you know, once you hit July, August, the season's about to ramp back up again. You gotta,
yeah.
Those are hard questions that their organization is going to have to answer or decide.
Yeah. So we talked a few minutes ago about, you know, what it was like for you when you travel as a young person and you're, you know, you're carefree and whatever, you go off and do your thing and leave your poor terrified mother behind. Is it any different for you now on the other end? I'm not saying in terms of being scared of your plane crashing or whatever, but, you know, now you're leaving a young son behind to go and do these things. Does, you know, do you worry about it on that end maybe a little more than you did about leaving your mother behind? You know, if something happened to me, is that something you ever let cross your mind?
It has never, ever crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if that's, you know, maybe something that should be crossing my mind. But no, it is just, it's never crossed my mind at all.
No.
And I mean, if it has, if it started to, or if it did, I would definitely have a harder time leaving home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a sense, I'm actually kind of glad it doesn't ever come up, but
I think you do a better job than I do. And then some other people do, not letting every little thing worry you. Right. But I just wondered, as you, you know, you're far away from home, obviously, no doubt you miss them and you'd like to be there for certain things, but I wonder if it just ever is cause for worry, right. That, you know, but I think you're probably better off if it's not on your mind. I was just curious, right?
The thing is with me too, is I do a lot of my travel is on planes. Mm-hmm. And to me, I mean, there's more crashes happening on the ground than there is in the air.
Yep.
So I think if maybe I was driving more, it might be, you know, a bit different. But the fact that, like I'm constantly flying, it's not, there's not too often I'm hopping on a bus or, you know, it's trains, which are relatively safe. I mean, don't get me wrong, cars and buses are safe too, but it's just,
things happen.
You know, exactly. And chances are you're more likely to get into an accident if you're in a car.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it just, I think because I'm flying 95% of the time, that's why it doesn't creep up in the back of the mind.
I guess we will, unless you had anything else you wanted to add, we'll kind of wind this down. I'll level with everybody. This was originally supposed to be, obviously more fun and whatever, before this came up. This is our 400th show, and we had kind of talked about and looked for some different things we could do to have some fun with that. Some things are just more important. And, so this came up and, I didn't want to throw any music on it. I didn't want to make a big deal out of it, but, as we wrap things up, I will share the GoFundMe page that Amy and I talked about a little while ago, at Tall Can Audio on Twitter. and at facebook.com/TallCanAudio if you want to give a couple of bucks to help them out. We will share that link. On a personal note, because this is, you know, our 400th show, I will just wrap it up by saying thank you to Rob, Christy, Nate Sager, Maddie Lang, Jill McSween, David Foote. You know, we've had a bunch of people who've contributed a lot to these, and one of them is on the line with us right now, Amy Burke, who's been around for quite a while too, and stepped in here tonight on anything but a pleasant topic. And, you know, I said to Amy when I texted her to do this, I said, I don't expect that you necessarily relate to this, because no one can. It's horrific. But you travel a lot, you know, you've been in some of these unique situations, and, you know, your perspective is pretty healthy, and I wanted to have you on to talk about it. So for this one and all the other ones that you've done along the last 400 shows, thank you. I do appreciate it, Amy.
You're welcome. I definitely did ponder it for a while, because like you said, you messaged me last night, and part of me wanted to say no, because I didn't want to end up crying on one of your podcasts.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, so I was definitely back and forth on it, and then I was like, nah, I can probably handle not crying for, you know.
I think
just talk, because I mean I haven't actually talked out loud about it.
Yeah,
it's just maybe, you know, when I first heard about it, and then just seeing things. You know, I read articles, and no one can see me tear up when I'm reading articles, or.
It's tough.
You know, SportsCenter has lots of stuff on it. So again, no one sees me crying when I'm watching my TV.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get the froggy throat or the sniffles or anything.
Well, I've managed to stop myself short of crying, but there's been numerous times where you read a certain sentence in one of these stories or watch a quick thing, like you said, on TV, or even what Ron and Don did on Coach's Corner on Saturday night, showing every one of those kids. And I got to tell you, Amy, I loved what they did. They said, at the time, I think there was only, as you mentioned, 14 confirmed dead. And Don said, you know, they're a team. We're not going to show just the 14. You know, they were a team. They wanted to show all of them. And they had Wheat Kings by the Tragically Hip playing in the background. I thought they handled it beautifully. And you can say a lot of things about Don Cherry, and he says a lot of stupid shit on TV, but very few people speak with the voice of the country in situations like that better than he does. And we see it a lot with the military stuff, and in situations like this, you know, Don is always someone who, you know, comes on and kind of in these situations says what we're all feeling. So there's been a lot of that across the country over the last couple of days. And, you know, all we can do, you and I, is sit here and wish these people well, and, you know, hope that that things, you know, get back to normal as quick as possible. But for a lot of families, it's never going to.
Well, and, you know, hopefully the storm clouds above them separate a bit.
Yeah.
And the blue sky and the sun shines through.
There's some people there who could use a smile.
Yeah. Oh, see, it's just so sad. Teary. I'd get teary. I wouldn't cry.
Yeah, I hear.
Teary. Yeah.
I do
have a reputation to be a baby, though.
Yes, you do. I'm not going to bother teeing up the rest of the week. Rob and I will be back with you guys later on in the week, and we'll get into some other stuff then, and our more usual nonsense. I think the conversation tonight was important, and if it helped you at all to work through with some of what you guys were feeling, then that's great. And in the meantime, we will talk to you later on down the road. Amy, thanks a lot for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good night, everyone, or day.
Yeah. My name is Matt Robinson for Amy Burke. We will see y'all later.